This is OTB AM.
We also have Graham Hunter with us straight off the top because that's how big a morning it is. Graham, how are you?
Listen, Gerald, cut with the formalities. Yes, he's going to Villa.
Right. I mean, why not? Come on, he's a romantic.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Weekdays from 7:30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Experience for all of these Armagh players. Benny Tierney is the last line of defence, fronted by the McNulty brothers. It's the 115th All-Ireland Football Final, the Bank of Ireland Final. Once again, it's the attacking left-half back. Loves to go forward, McCann. Will this one land between the posts? It will, and it's Stephen McDonald. First point then coming inside the first minute and a half. Good start by Armagh. It was a nice hot afternoon. It's quite cold and breezy now. This is inside towards McGrain. It comes back nicely. It's the first goal and it's scored by Oisin McConnell.
Wonderful piece of play. Lovely little flick on.
It's anybody's match again. Armagh looking for the equaliser. Will they get it through Ronan Clark? Moynihan comes out. It's a good one and it's over the bar and the teams are level. Dropped in neatly here. Once again, it is Stephen McDonnell, and he's put it over the bar. It's his third point. More significantly, Armagh lead the All-Ireland Final. Tomás O'Shea feeding it in, and good defensive play by Armagh. It's out to Kieran McGeady, the captain. It's all over.
What a result, sir. Fantastic result for Armagh. Oh, what a credit to them, the way they applied themselves when everything seemed gone from them.
Fantastic day for Armagh. They have won the All-Ireland. Sam is going north once again. First time since 1994.
22nd of September 2002. I can tell you what, it feels like a different world. It was a different world to 22nd of September 2020. And I would suspect that is especially the case for our three guests this evening. We are talking about Armagh and their famous All-Ireland win against Kerry. 1-12. To Kerry's 14 points, a one-point victory. Very happy to say we have three of the men involved. We have Enda McNulty playing in defence, we have Joe Kernan, the manager, and we have goalkeeper Benny Tierney. Let me go around the houses, make sure your lines are all okay. Enda, you're there, you can hear me?
Great to see you, Joe, and great to hear from you again.
Yes, likewise, my man. We have Joe Kernan. How are you, Joe?
Hello, how are you doing?
Great to have you with us. And Benny Tierney, you're there.
Yes, I'm here, Damien, as well. Cheers.
Good to have you with us. So, Enda, I just want to read a letter here which arrived under your door on the morning of the final. Dear Armagh player, it's with great pleasure that I write to each of you today wishing you the very best of luck at the All-Ireland Football Championship Final. You've already made history and you should be very proud of yourself. I understand how much this means to you and I'm honoured if I provided some inspiration to you along the way. But you are also an inspiration to the thousands of people who will be watching and who followed the Armagh team all season. As one who has heritage from Ireland, my great-grandfather, I know that the luck of the Irish is not just a saying. Best wishes to you on a successful match. Your co-countryman, Muhammad Ali. Tell me you still have that, Enda.
I absolutely still have it. It's in a drawer in Armagh. I have to thank Joe and Hugh Campbell for making that possible. I actually shared a room with Benny Tierney on the morning of the All-Ireland, and I woke up to use the bathroom and I could see this envelope slipped under the door. Normally, Benny on big match morning is joking and laughing and taking the mick out of me and slagging me and so on. So I says to Benny, Benny, this must be a letter to say that you're not starting today or something. There must be something going on here. And then I opened the letter, and of course, the letter was from Muhammad Ali. The both of us, I think it's fair to say, Benny, were dumbfounded. He's been a lifelong hero of all of ours, any sports person in the world, of course. Ali has been a huge inspiration. We just could not believe that we had a signed letter from the greatest athlete, arguably, of all time. We were very excited. We were very inspired. And it certainly started the day off on a very positive note. Big thank you to Joe and Hugh Campbell for organizing that.
Yes. Benny, what was your reaction when you saw it?
Well, I was equally as perplexed as Enda when it first arrived. It wasn't something that had happened before, but normally Enda and Jared Reid or Justin McNulty would play tricks on the morning or during or the morning before games. So I was sort of half expecting some sort of yarn. But when I opened it and read it, I suppose it was like everything that happened that year. It was something new, something fresh and something that motivated us and something that maybe, you know, it was done at a particular time, about 7 a.m, that your mind was already geared in to what was going to be one of the biggest occasions in our lives. And when you get a letter from Muhammad Ali, you realize the efforts that Joe and Paul Grimley and Hugh Campbell went to get this and to get Muhammad Ali on board. And I think when we only heard about a couple of months ago how much work was involved. We at the time took it in our stride as just another idea to get us, because it was going to be the biggest day of our lives and we were going to have to make history. And when you got a letter from one of the men who, well, I suppose I loved Muhammad Ali because he was a character as well as a boxer. So he did a lot of mouthing like I would have done, but he also did the business when he got into the ring. There are some who say I didn't do it when I got on the field anyway, but it was a very special start to what was going to be one of the most special days of our lives.
And Joe Kernan, obviously you and Hugh Campbell went to great lengths to get this. Did any part of you think, well, you know, geez, this is such a, you know, a momentous day for all these players anyway, maybe I shouldn't do anything extra. You know, I should try and normalise the day and keep it business as usual. Obviously, you went the whole way and got Muhammad Ali. Did you have any misgivings about doing that on the morning of the final?
I know Benny and Enda's after saying that I had something to do with it. Like every team then, we took in sports psychologists and Hugh Campbell and Des Jennings. Don't forget Des Jennings there, were the two guys that we had working with us. And we worked closely with them as management, and we wouldn't let the players know what was happening. But it was those two men that got the Muhammad Ali letter. I had nothing got to do with it whatsoever. There was one put under my door as well. And the fact that it was done and the sports psychologist obviously looked into on match days, and we wanted to take the nervousness away from the boys. There's no good being sick and with worry in the morning, which would affect some people. And certainly this was a fantastic distraction to have one of the greatest people in ambassadors in sport in the world to have a letter sent to you individually under your door. And I think it brought a bit of calmness to Everton, along with a lot of joy, and it did the job it was supposed to do. But like Enda, I have mine in the house here. I know exactly where it is. And it's one of those treasures that you'll have for all time. And it was just part of something special on the greatest day of our life.
Yes, I'm sure. I didn't realise, Enda, that you and Benny Tierney were rooming together. I have to say, I wouldn't have put you together as naturals in that room.
To be honest, we had great times. Sharing with Benny was a master stroke, both from Joe and from the previous coach, Bran McAlinden. In my early career, I joined the squad very early, and they recognised that by putting me along with Benny, a more experienced player, a much more serious man than I was, that he might be able to keep me calm and cool under pressure. So certainly we give a big call out to Benny for teaching me the ropes early days in my career, and then we stayed sharing with each other right throughout the most of my, certainly, inter-county career.
So, Benny, I mean, Enda is 25 years old. To set the scene here, 2002 for younger listeners. Armagh, I mean, like loads of talent. They had won Ulsters in 99 and 2000, had lost a semi-final in 2000 in a replay in extra time against Kerry. Enda was 25 years of age. You'd retired, Benny, and then you came out of retirement. Was it Joe Kernan coming on board that kind of twisted your arm? Or what was your thinking about where Armagh were heading into 2002?
Well, I hadn't officially retired, but I'd more or less, I told my current wife that I was retiring, and she was happy enough with the news. And I was 33. I suppose I was the eldest member of the panel. I was probably one of the few who was married, and I think I was the only one who had a child as well. So at that stage, Paul Hardy was an up-and-coming goalkeeper who was extremely good. And I had I'd finished in 2001 and been dropped after playing Tyrone in the first round of the championship. And like, there comes a time when you say to yourself, it's time to walk away. And it would be very easy for Joe and Paul Grimley to facilitate me. And, you know, I thought I was getting a Dear John call from Joe one day. He said, you know, I wouldn't mind a crack with you. And I said, don't be worrying about it, Joe. I sort of made up my mind. Things are grand and I'm happy to walk away. And Joe says, I wouldn't be so rash about this, Benny. I think you have a pivotal part to play. And I thought Joe was being magnanimous and giving an old dog a last hurrah and saying, come back to the panel. And in my own mind, I was saying he probably wanted me to come back for experience and personality rather than actually playing, which at 32, 33 years of age, I don't think I could have done at that time. But Joe wouldn't take no on the first phone call, and then he said he'd meet me, and he did. He drove up to the house and we had a chat, and he said his finishing shot with me was, "You're not going to be part of the first Armagh team ever to win in All Ireland," and he says, "Think about how that's going to affect you." And I, again, you know, I didn't rush in straight away and say I'll come back. And Joe being Joe, he rang me a couple of days later, I think it was about 8 o'clock in the morning, caught me unawares. He says, "I'm drawing up a panel in there, he had many a year and year out." And I just decided there, I said, listen, in my own mind, I said, I'll give it a couple of months here and see what way it's going and see what way things are. But it's probably the best decision I've ever made. I probably would be in a Betty Ford clinic if I hadn't made it. But it was a great decision for me personally, because not only because of what Armagh went on to do, and I was so fortunate, I still feel very fortunate that I was part of that whole regime, but just for Joe to, if he had just phoned me, I wouldn't have joined. If he'd have just come and visited me, I probably would. But he did, he came at me 3 times to come back. And for that, I probably owe Joe an immense debt of gratitude, because, you know, it was and still remains to be something that we are very, very proud of in Armagh. We're the first team to do it and the only team to do it yet. But it was a sort of Royal Rovers story for me, coming back from retirement and having probably the most memorable year in Gaelic football that I would ever have.
Yes, I'm sure. That's the voice of Benny Tierney, who was in goals in 2002. We've Enda McNulty with us as well, if you're just tuning in. And Joe Kernan, the manager, 22nd of September 2002 is what we're looking back on. So Joe, coming into that season, you obviously were very aware of the talent in the team, and you know, you'd done your stuff with Cross McGlenn as well. It sounds, listening to Benny, like you really felt there was an All-Ireland in this team.
Yeah, the most important thing in the early stages, speaking to the players, there was so much hurt in every one of those players. And if there's not hurt, you know, a team can be a spent force, and maybe they took enough batterings to say, no, I can't do this anymore. And the 3 previous years being beaten by the 3 winners of the All-Ireland was hard to take. But these boys were so hungry for success that, you know, it only drove them on more. And they were a close-knit group, right? There was a few new faces come in, some newer blood, the likes of Ronan Clark, to freshen it up. But the backbone of the team was a crowd of boys that were hungry, were close, were like brothers, and they wanted to go to battle again. So from that point of view, my job was easy. It was just pointing them in the right direction and maybe change a few wee things in the way we played. But they had the hunger and I had the belief, and certainly as the year went on, we both gelled well together.
Joe, fact or fiction, did you take a couple of the lads for a few drinks in Dublin before the semi-final to let the rumour get out that Armagh were on the lash down in Dublin?
I don't know whether... I don't know what happened that night. I'll say nothing about that. You do things at times for a bit of crack, and you know, sometimes you send out messages, but I can't remember that night. I think that's one of them things Benny Tierney started, one of them many rumours.
So, Enda, you were. I know often you and Justin, your brother, and Kieran McGeaney, you know, lots of cups of coffee around kitchen tables, and where are we falling short and what can we do? When Joe Kernan talks there about the hurt that was in this group, I suspect you can remember that and relate to that.
We're very fortunate. When you look back now, and we're all, in a way, we're almost ashamed to talk about the fact that Armagh only won one All-Ireland. But I guess because Benny mentioned and Joe mentioned, we're so proud of that one All-Ireland, and the team will go on to win more, please God, in the next 5-10 years and beyond. But one of the things that we now look back with those orange-tinted glasses and recognise, we had amazing leaders. We had created a first-class culture. We had created an amazing winning mentality that won 7 Ulsters as well as on All-Ireland. But in that team, we had some phenomenal leaders like the Kieran McGinneys, the Paul McGrains. Benny Tierney is highly underrated in terms of his mental toughness and composure. Benny was always ice cool behind us in the full back line, and I think that was underrated. Of course, we had a very strong head coach in Joe Kernan. I was about to say Joe Schmidt. And of course, we had another very strong coach in Paul Grimley. So we had all the makings of a very successful team. Joe mentioned a lot of hurt. We had a huge amount of hurt in the former or in the previous 4 or 5 years, but we were learning. We were learning tactically. We were learning from leadership point of view. We were learning from a mental toughness point of view. And yes, we were learning about that winning IQ that I spoke about very often on off the ball before. Kieran McGinney deserves a massive call out. It is not an overstatement to say he's one of the best leaders I've ever encountered in any walk of life, in business, in sport, in any walk of life. Paul McGrain doesn't get enough credit for that in his leadership and his amazing authenticity as a leader. Andrew McCann, again, another guy that doesn't get a lot of mention, a guy who we call the Iceman, ice cool under pressure. So at that time, Armagh had a formidable group of leaders. The culture was incredibly strong that Joe significantly added to. And of course, then we learned how to win in the biggest stage of them all. Mm.
Your memory of the semi-final against Dublin, and I know you've talked about this before, so we don't need to labour the point, but to give listeners a sense of the pressure and the expectation and the hype, you know, I think you've talked about even pre-throw-in almost not wanting to be there, shaking like a lamb, I think was the expression that you use. You know, this is the biggest game in the county since 1977.
I remember the stadium shaking before the game, sitting in there in the change rooms, Joe giving a very compelling, succinct speech. Geezer always giving a very inspirational last word. And I remember my body shaking literally with nerves. In the warm-up, my body continued to shake. I used the phrase before, almost like a lamb's legs. I remember Joe shouting to us in the warm-up, and I couldn't hear his voice because I was so nervous. I couldn't almost distill his voice from the noise of the crowd. But then somewhere along the line, I made a decision to listen to what Hugh Campbell had been saying to me before and to really start to manage my mind by using my breathing and changing where my focus went to. And I started to repeat over and over again about getting that first ball, about really owning the moment and owning, I guess, seizing that moment. And in the national anthem, I basically controlled my mind, my emotions, and of course my body. First ball was kicked in between me and Alan Brogan. I jumped up nice and high, got a punch of the ball. The ball bounced. I got a solo and a hand pass, I think, to O'Sheen. And my nerves had disappeared, and I went on to have one of the best halves I ever had in my life. Mm.
Benny, you don't strike me as the nervous type.
No, listen, I think we all cope with different scenarios in different ways, and I suppose the fact that, you know, I was probably more excited about the game than nervous about the game. You know, I had a really good feeling. I remember meeting Geezer the day before in the City West, and two of us just had a chat together, you know, and I'd played at Geezer club level, and I'd shared a house with him in Belfast, and, you know, we're cut out of two different stones, I would say, the two of us, but he just looked at me and he smiled, and that was a big thing for Geezer even to smile. So he said, you know, I have a really good feeling about this, and I sort of looked at him and I said, you know, so do I. And there was a calmness. Joe talked about a calmness there as well. You know, we were in uncharted territory for us. You know, it was Dublin. You know, every team, you know, if you beat Dublin and Kerry to win in Ireland, it's extra kudos. And I think there's an article written in the paper that week that even the taxi drivers know Dublin would beat Armagh today. So we were being given relatively little hope as usual. But Enda talked about it there, you know, the preparation and everything that Joe and Paul and Hugh Campbell and everybody was involved. We were looked after extremely well. Everything that could have been put in place was put in place. And Enda was right. His legs were shaking like a baby lamb, but Enda did have probably one of his best games in an Armagh jersey. So it showed you that even though he was very nervous, he was ready for it. We were all ready for it. Now, you know, I wasn't totally convinced. You know, it was the sort of game that it was nearly leading to the final, and we had to get through it, or else we would just have been another Armagh team that couldn't perform in Croke Park, which was what has been said about us all our lives. So it was making that breakthrough and getting to the final. And the sweetest part of it all was that we beat Dublin and Kerry on the way. So there's nothing can ever be said about that team or that performance or that year. And you know, we, as it was mentioned earlier, they said we were knocking on the door, like, we would have been remembered as the team that was knocking on the door. And I feel for Mayo every time I see them get to a decider, because I begrudge nobody that sense of satisfaction, that sense of worth as a Gaelic footballer that you get from winning in All-Ireland. And I still feel very fortunate when I look at the calibre of players who have not walked up the steps on the third Sunday in September to receive the Sam Maguire, because we know what it's like in Armagh to walk up them steps. We also know what it's like to walk the other way. And I feel every All-Ireland final for the side that doesn't make it, especially a side that's yearning for.
Joe, this was a very modern, and certainly by the standards of 02, Joe, a very modern setup. I mean, sports psychologists you mentioned, and I think you went to La Manga for warm weather training when it wasn't necessarily the done thing, and you know, no stone left unturned. So ahead of the final, can you give us two things here, Joe? Your memories on like the atmosphere in the county, because I can only imagine what it was like. And then what was the game plan against Kerry?
Well, the game plan was the same plan as we probably had all year. You know, you talked about La Manga there. You know, and the reason we went to La Manga was, one, the winter was that bad, we missed certain training. But the main reason was to get the players away on their own, to get people at home talking about them, to get people to saying they were on a jolly. And the boys, they'll tell you themselves, they worked so hard. There was no drink, there was no glasses of wine, there was no nothing. It was all about working hard and when they come home. But these boys, you know, they had a rough last 3 years. You know, they learned over those 3 years how to cope with pressure. And Enda talked about the pressure there with the legs. He was able to, even in his own mind, he didn't feel right up in the warm-up. But as soon as the game started, his mind was ready to play and played one of his best games. We learned how to finish, you know, and the boys heard this story from me for years. You know, you can play bad all day, but you can still finish strong and win. And that team learned how to finish strong. They were able to cope with the pressures. And that was the one thing that happened in the final. You know, with 12 minutes to go, we drew, we got the winning point, and we held out for 12 minutes against a Kerry team that are used to winning All-Ireland, that are used to coping, but we were the ones that coped on the day. So that was the difference in these boys, that they learned how to cope, learned how to finish, had the ability, we had the players, we had the leaders, but that was the one thing they were lacking, and it was coping on the big stage, and they certainly did that under immense pressure. 12 minutes to go and hell out against the Kerry team in an All-Ireland final. You know, there's not too many teams that did that, and they were deserving winners in the finish-off with the teams to beat on the way.
Mm. And your memory of the build-up in the county, Joe, in advance?
Oh, sure. You know, the place was mad, but there again, the boys coped well with it. You know, everywhere you went, and like we got the message out, you know, you got to stay away from it. We got the message to the parents, don't get the boys involved in tickets. You take control of the tickets. You know, everybody, we didn't want people annoying the players, which I'm sure it did seep in certain ways. But the boys, once again, were able to cope with it. And once we got into our own wee shell at training or going to the match, you know, once we got away together, we were happy. You know, we were in our own environment. We were in our own bubble as such. You know, and we were just kept building it up slowly. We tried not to get too much get into us. But when we got away to Dublin that night, we relaxed in the hotel. You heard about the latter then in the morning. Mm. You know, the only time he used to annoy me was going to the match on the bus, going in. That was the only time it used to get to me. I used to be sick in my stomach. But once you get into the stadium and you're ready to go to battle, you know, everybody just acts normal, looks forward to it, and they give it everything they have. On that given day, it was amazing. The next 2 weeks after that was a bit rough.
I'm sure it was. And a true or false, I read this. Did you play Al Pacino's speech from Any Given Sunday on the coach into Croke Park that morning?
I heard you send that on the top of the programme, Joe, as you introduced the programme tonight. That is true, but I think what's more important in this speech is what it meant to us. What it meant to us wasn't the inspirational words of Pacino. What it meant to us that every single person had committed to getting every tackle, every block, every meter back that you tackled back for, and so on. So it wasn't the speech, it was what it meant to us, that everybody was committed to doing whatever it takes to go and win the game. And probably more important than that speech was Joe's speech at halftime was one of the biggest and best speeches, arguably, in Gaelic Games history. And on top of that, what wasn't really spoken enough about was Paul McGrain's speech that followed on from Joe and what Kieran McGinney had said. And I remember vividly what they had said after Joe made that really inspirational speech. Paul McGrain spoke about tackling, everybody taking responsibility up in their tackling game. Yeah. And Kieran McGinney speaking about how we were going to lay down a marker in the first 5 minutes. I remember vividly those words that will stick with me for the rest of my life.
Okay. And so, I mean, be curious even to compare by modern day psychology, because I mentioned it at the top. Like, you think of that Pacino speech and it's, you're ready to run through a wall. But I mean, if you're only coming onto Jones's Road, are you getting too pent up too early? It's kind of, you know, the stick to the process and stay calm seems to be the modern day thing. If you're listening to that on the way in, I'd say you're all riled up, no?
Well, to be honest with you, I think the preparation of the backroom staff and the coaching staff for that game was almost perfect. Sean Boylan, Joe Kiernan got Sean Boylan to speak to us about what to expect when you arrive into the tunnels, the cameras that be stuck on your face. He spoke about, obviously, you'd be nervous, would be able to handle and manage the nerves. So I have to say that the whole preparation, the physical, the mental, the technical, the tactical, the guys got almost perfect for that final.
Right. So Boylan spoke to you, what, a week or two before the match?
Boylan spoke to us in Eamon Mackel, one of the backroom staff members' house, very privately done, and spoke to us about everything to expect on an Ireland final weekend. The hype of the media, the hype of your family. I remember vividly he spoke about that your mums and your dads and your aunts and your uncles will be so hyped up, they'll be very nervous. Keep yourself away from that hype. Keep yourself away from their nervous tension. Sean Boylan was just a masterclass in his advice to us at that time.
Mm. Joe, tell us about halftime then. You're 4 points down. This is like the most discussed halftime speech, I think, in GAA history.
Yeah, well, actually, in the semi-final, see, sometimes you want to take the pressure off the boys when they come into the dressing room. What we used to do is just check to see if there are any injuries. Then myself and Paul and John would win and have a chat and leave the players on their own for a while. Then we come back in. But in the semi-final, I took off my All-Ireland jersey that I wore in 77. Now, sometimes you can say too much, but I felt that if I could bring something into the room that would relax the boys and give them an idea to have something that they never had before. So I had an All-Ireland jersey. I played in the final. Unfortunately, we got beaten by Dublin. But I wanted every player to have one of these jerseys. And the only way they were going to get it was by beating Dublin. So after I used that in the semi-final, I said, now, what can I do in the final if things is going against us again? So myself and Eamon Mackel, my good friend and right-hand man then, he's Mr. Fix, as we used to call him, we came up with the idea of an All-Ireland medal and the plaque that I had, which everybody knows has stuck in my house for 30 years. And every time I looked at it, you know, I didn't feel good. I felt a loser, you know. So I said, if we could have an All-Ireland medal and use the plaque, it might just give relax, but at the same time, just take some of the pressure off and maybe lift the heads at the right time. So I showed them the plaque. I told them I didn't want any of them to have something in their house for the rest of their life that they wouldn't be proud of having. And I hopped it up the wall and it broke into a few pieces. Eamon gave me the medal that he had. Eamon bought him. He had a medal that he bought at an auction one time, yeah. But it was an All-Ireland medal. I said, I want you to have this, you know. And then followed up by Paul and Geezer, and you know. But there again, these boys had learnt and prepared, you know. And we weren't going to throw it away at halftime. The good thing, probably on the day, was that we went in at halftime. Kerry maybe thought, you know, this is the old Armagh team. They're going to do the same thing, but they weren't. They weren't. These boys were ready. They weren't going to leave it in the dressing room. They weren't prepared to just hand it to Kerry. And they went out and done all the things they said they were going to do. The one thing about these boys, if they said they were going to do something, they did it. If it meant training extra, if it meant going through a wall, if it meant climbing mountains, they did it. They never questioned anything. And when they said they were going out and they're going to make life tough for Kerry in the second half, they certainly did that. And, you know, and then you go back to that 12 minutes where the ball was going back and forward and we fought and we scraped. You know, Tony McEntee came on that day and I don't think he caught the ball once, but he toe-poked and palmed four or five balls away that Kerry would have got and maybe got a score. You know, Barry Duffy coming on and scoring a goal against Tyrone in the replay, you know, players that probably weren't seen, John Donaldson coming on and playing exceptionally well in the second half against Sligo in Navan, you know, and didn't get back in. But all those players and every member of that squad had an impact either in training in matches, in talking in dressing rooms and leading. You know, it was just a wonderful group of boys, and they got their just reward eventually.
I don't suppose your plaque was ever pieced together for you, was it?
No, Eamon picked it up, actually. And it's sitting here. I think it actually is in the museum in Croke Park, in the Hall of Fame. And they got it last year, but I think there's a bit of super glue went to work on it. And there was a bit of silver on it, on the front of it. And over the years, that fell off, but I never worried about it. So there was a plaque with a tainted colour in the centre and a bit of wood, about 5 inches tall, sitting looking at me every day for 30 years. So there's something better there now.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. Benny, full-time whistle goes. What happens?
Oh, I think pandemonium happens. I think there's a picture of me was splashed around every newspaper, and I think it shows me crying and not knowing what to do. But it's funny, like, you remember the final whistle. Even though I look like someone who loves the attention, I don't like crowds. So I was deciding, right, I'm getting beside Geisha for this presentation. So I was sprinting, and a local book agent of my own landed on my shoulder, and he was roaring and crying. And I said, "Where were you?" And he says, "You said he was the top of the Hogan." So he come down from the top of the Hogan. He was the first person to hit me. But I remember also meeting a guy called Dominic Barnes, who would have followed Armagh from we were Division 4. He never missed a match. And I met him, and he was in a state of mass confusion. He didn't know where he was. And I got him settled and got him. He's an old gentleman, and got him off the pitch. But I thought it was ironic that I'd met Dominic, because he would have been maybe one of about 30 supporters, you know, that he would have played against in Division 4 against the likes of Tipperary, Kilkenny and football, believe it or not. And that's the journey we'd come on, and the journey that I and a lot of these players would come on. So it was so special, and it was so memorable to be beside Geezer as well when he was getting the cup. And it was one of those moments where you dream about, I suppose, from you're about 6 or 7 years of age, but you never think will happen to you personally or to your team. But I suppose in life, I've been very fortunate in football, and it was a crowning moment, especially when it was the last game you played for Armagh as well. So you're going out at the very top, and I still get goosebumps when I think about it. But it was just pandemonium and get off the pitch. And as Joe said, the next 2 weeks were interesting.
That's the cuteness of you, Tierney. Get in the photo right next to McGeaney when he's lifting the trophy. That's cute.
Absolutely.
And what are your big memories post final whistle? I mean, even on the night. I mean, I would say this time, 18 years ago exactly, you're probably at the banquet and the Sunday game's about to happen and all that kind of lovely stuff. Some players get locked and they haven't drank in however long and they just want to go to oblivion. Others want to soak it all in for those few days. What was your approach?
This time exactly, I'd say 18 years ago, I was in the back seat of the bus where I always sat alongside McGrain, my brother Justin. Benny would always be in that back seat, Paddy McKeever, and there'd always be great crack. But Benny was sitting right beside me on the bus on the way to the City West. He's usually good fun, he's usually good crack, but he was literally hopping with energy. He was hopping with fun, and he was hopping with jokes. Beers are coming thick and heavy, of course. So that's my vivid memory of going to the City West. When we got to City West, the Armagh crowd was heaving out of the whole of City West on the way in. When we got inside the hotel, it was just manic. Benny used the word pandemonium. It was just manic. People coming from all angles. But in fairness to Joe and grounding it back to the preparation, I remember all of our suits vividly were in the hotel rooms, already put into the wardrobes. We never got to see the suits. We never got to see the ties. All of that, let's say, mental clutter was all dealt with weeks before the final. So when we got to the rooms, we had no clue. Was it a blue suit, a grey suit, a black suit? Obviously, it didn't matter, but it showed the level of detail that the backroom staff had put in place. When we got down into the room, a really funny story is my brother Justin was sitting at the table, and obviously Marty Morrissey was doing up for the post-game reception. Mm. And Marty Morrissey was maybe interviewing Paddy McKeever or John McEntee, a really heroic player that needs to get a lot of credit as well, of course. And Justin had this wise idea with a few beers on board that he would stick the fork into Marty Morrissey's backside as he was doing the interview. So if you play back the interview, you'll see Marty Morrissey literally hopping down, up and down, jumping because Justin's hitting him with the fork for fun to keep the crack going. So it was just absolutely electric fun. That continued on for the boys up at home for months. I was living in Dublin at the time. So about a week and a half later, I was back in the gym, unfortunately, and being boring, Benny would slag me for that, of course. But it was just amazing memories, really, really fun memories.
Benny gave it a few more weeks before hitting the gym again, I'd say.
I didn't hit the gym when I was supposed to hit the gym. No, listen, and telling the trick there, it was a very special occasion. I can remember vividly Enda getting up on the bus and on the way to the City West and saying, you know, lads, we'll never have to buy another drink, which was ironic for Enda because he never bought a drink before, since, or after. But very, very special times, I can assure you.
Joe, what was your big memory of the days or week after?
Well, go back to the day. From a management point of view, the biggest satisfaction I always got was watching players going up the steps, because that 5 minutes after a match is when it belongs to the players. And to watch the players going up, and myself, Paul, John, and the rest of the back and me, and we're all standing down on the edge of the pitch watching them. To me, that's the greatest bit of what gratitude that I could get as a manager, watching the boys going up those steps. You know, a funny thing that day, I have 5 sons, and four of them got into the dressing room after the match. But there was a bit of, I'd say, a dozen other boys got in and said they were my sons as well. And one of my sons, Paul, was outside. I think, Benny, you actually got him in. Paul was outside telling the guard, but I am Joe Cannon's son. He says, how many effing sons does Joe Cannon have? But only for that. And we got a photograph taken inside, myself, Patricia, and four of the boys, and poor Paul wasn't in the photograph. But the last thing that I really enjoyed, and the boys remember this, coming up the driveway in City West, I had a CD done on Tina Turner, Simply the Best. Well, that drive up the long driveway to City West, and we never got off the bus until the song was finished. And there was thousands outside baying to get us, to greet us and get us off the bus. But not one person got off the bus, and it was bouncing with Tina Turner singing Simply the Best. And then the last thing was downstairs in the room, when we had a room planned for the players and the family to come down and have a couple of drinks before we went into the banquet room. And that was fantastic to see all the wives, the girlfriends there as well, because there was two teams, you know what I mean? And I remember when I took over the job, first I spoke to the girlfriends and the wives on their own and said, I want to borrow these boys for the next 9 months. And you never really seen the girls until match days, but that evening in the hotel together, when we had a bit of time together and we were able to go around and talk to each other and hug and kiss and enjoy it. That was a special time with the whole lot together. Then we went downstairs and sure, all hell broke loose, and that's true. But I think Enda maybe stuck the fork a few times, and Marty Morrissey as well. So I think there were two of them in that. To be blamed on that job.
Well, fellas, look, it's been brilliant. 22nd of September 2002, Armagh winning the All-Ireland. It's been what a lovely trip down memory lane on a cold Tuesday night. It's a different 22nd of September 2020, that's for sure. Enda McNulty, my thanks to you as ever. Joe Kernan, great to have you with us. And Benny Tierney, a pleasure. Thanks so much, fellas.
Cheers.
It's the guy who's willing to die who's going to win that itch. And I know if I'm going to have any life anymore, it's because I'm still willing to fight and die for that itch. Because that's what living is. The 6 inches in front of your face. Now, I can't make you do it. You got to look at the guy next to you. Look into his eyes. Now, I think you're going to see a guy who will go that inch with you.
Hell yeah.
You're going to see a guy who will sacrifice himself for this team, because he knows when it comes down to it, you're going to do the same for him. That's a team, gentlemen. And either we heal now as a team, or we will die as individuals.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.